February 22nd, 2019. This is Mary Armstrong, and I'm here with Ted Rosenberger in his lovely home, and thanking him for doing an interview with the Queer Archives Project at Lafayette College. Ted, we always start with some formalities. If you would state your name and confirm that your participation is voluntary and you've given your consent, we'd just like to start out with that if we could.
Hi, Ted Rosenberger, and class of 88, and I'm happy to participate.
Great, and you let me take a photo of you earlier, and it's okay with you if we connect this to the interview online and in the archives?
Absolutely.
Great, thank you, and thank you for that. So there's a bit of a preamble, if you'll bear with me. We like to remind everyone that you can decline any answer, any question you don't wish to address. What we really hope you'll do is elaborate on questions or make additional comments as you wish. We also like to say that basically the interview it's not a frozen moment in time. If you think later of something you'd really like to share and write down and send to us or anything like that, it's not like this is the moment and that's
right.
The end.
Okay.
But I think the most important thing to say is that for every interview, it's your story. We don't have any specific questions we want answered, so we don't even think of them. I think of the questions more like prompts to try to jog your memory, because college wasn't just yesterday, to help you think about different aspects of life at Lafayette while you were there in the 80s. So do you prefer he pronouns?
Absolutely.
Okay, and you're an alum and class of 88. So what was your major or majors? You have this in the questionnaire, but just to say so.
Sure. So I was a computer science major.
Mm-hmm.
To my recollection, I was only the second graduating class for computer science. It was a brand new program.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, that was one of the things that attracted me to the school.
That it had just come along?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right in that era. And how do you identify as a member of the LGBTQ community?
I identify as gay.
Mm-hmm. And this will be an interesting answer for you, because I know a little bit of the answer, but how do you professionally describe yourself? And this, I know you've had many different many different forms of employment, work, life, vocation, just a short description. We'll add your bio that you've provided. But
well, I would say that at my core, I'm a serial entrepreneur and a technologist.
That's a great description, and you've had many, many different ins and out with technology, and and you fly now.
Yes, it's something that after I graduated from Lafayette and then Penn with a master's degree, I was in the corporate world for a short time, and then I decided to start my own company. And not long after I started my company, one of my clients was taking flying lessons. And I definitely have workaholic tendencies. And so really early on, I needed something. I was working 18-hour days in front of a computer at the time. And
yeah.
I needed something that was interesting enough to get me out of the office. And flying was something that, I don't know, it just said, that's something I'd really like to learn to do. And, flying is like the ultimate multidisciplinary activity. It involves, an understanding of mechanical things, weather, and mature decision making. And it's cool machines and computers, and I don't know, it was just like all these different disciplines that I felt, I had the ability to master. And so I enrolled in a local community college. Lehigh Community College had a ground school class, and then after the first class I walked up to the professor who was teaching the academic part of learning to fly, and I said, well, how do I actually learn to fly an airplane? And he's like, well, why don't you come up to Slatington Airport this weekend and you can have your first lesson.
Oh, wow.
So I went to Slatington Airport that first weekend, started doing the flying, and you know, within a year I had my pilot's license. The next year I bought my first plane, and almost 30 years later, I think I've owned close to 10 planes and 2 helicopters now.
Wow, wow.
And flying, you know, has been and remains, you know, one of my core passions and continuing interests.
Yeah, wow. That's, you plunged in and it really was the right thing for you. You just...
It's always been the thing that got me out of the office. And
that's marvelous.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Anything else to add about who you are?
Who I am?
Yeah.
Well, I grew up on a farm. I was surrounded by good, wholesome people, and you know, I like to think that rubbed off on me. I think of myself as a kind, thoughtful person, someone who loves life and seeks to maximize every day.
That's fantastic. That's beautiful. That's wonderful. Thank you. So we'll start in with some very general questions, thinking back about to your time at Lafayette.
Mm-hmm.
And this is very broad, but it's sort of meant to be. The general situation on campus, and you can imagine that different interviewees have very different answers to this, right?
Mm-hmm.
For people who identified as members of the LGBT community.
Yes.
Sort of like just what it felt like. Was it safe? Was it visible? Were people out? Were they not out? Just the big description of, you know, if you're there and it's 1988.
Well, first of all, you know, I would consider myself, you know, a late bloomer across the board. So, you know, my sexuality wasn't really in my, you know, in the top five things that dominated my thoughts most of the time during Lafayette. And, you know, I didn't really, you know, date too much at Lafayette. And, you know, I was heavily involved in my fraternity, which was Phi Kappa Psi. I, you know, ended up being an officer several years in the fraternity. And now I certainly, you know, quietly, you know, noticed that I was attracted to some of my friends and struggled with that, you know, during the Lafayette years. But, you know, I would have never labeled myself as gay or even, you know, really focused on it that much. And I did my darndest to actually date some women. In retrospect, it was probably more to impress my friends and feel like one of the guys than something that was, you know, mm-hmm. genuinely driven by genuine feelings.
Mm-hmm. Like a social thing more than...
Yeah. 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 It was in that sort of the fraternity culture. Well,
yeah.
You know, who were you with last night kind of culture? Unfortunately.
Unfortunately, but nonetheless.
Right.
Was there gay life on campus? Was the word spoken? Was it
I mean, from my perspective as a guy in a fraternity, mm-hmm. you know, certainly there were, I wouldn't go so far as to say it was like an outwardly homophobic environment, but it just wasn't discussed.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people used, you know, fraternity brothers would use, you know, demeaning slang terms, calling each other fags and this and that all the time. And so, and, you know, I honestly, I don't know, I was razor focused on academics and having fun. And so, you know, there might have been one or two people that might have given off some gay vibes. There might have been a little bit of gossip that I heard that, oh, you know, this male or this female, you know, might be gay. But it just wasn't, it was so closeted and so not discussed and so uncool to even go there that, you know, it just wasn't something I thought about, and what I mentioned when we when I sent an email to you before, you know, I did, I was struggling a good part of the time at Lafayette with, you know, just feeling attracted to various close friends of mine. And it was a tough, I never really acted on it, never once. But it was enough of a struggle that, you know, I enrolled myself in the counseling center at Lafayette just to kind of explore these issues. And, you know, my, I mean, I could go into that a little bit now.
If you'd like to, sure, please do.
Yeah, so, you know, the counselor I had is, you know, it was a female, and I honestly do not remember her name. And I remember really liking her. And without sounding coming off wrong, I felt that she really adored me. I felt like she really, really liked me.
Yeah, yeah.
And
I can't say I'm surprised to hear that.
I don't know. Maybe I was charming, or but
I think so.
That there, you know, she, I think she was intrigued by me, and so. But then, you know, I would touch upon the issues of like, I'm just feeling attracted to my friends. Yeah. And it wasn't even, you know, like I was a late bloomer sexually, so it wasn't even worded as a sexual attraction. It was just like, I don't know. I just wanted to be with them, you know.
Yeah. And you were in a culture that would have magnified being with women. So maybe the comparison, you could feel it, mm-hmm. if you weren't as interested. I mean, frat life is, as you said, very intimate.
You know. And there were lots of, you know, homoerotic hazing, you know, borderline hazing oriented things, you know, nothing that in my looking back was, you know, life threatening or dangerous, and, you know, a lot of laughs and things. But some of those things might have meant slightly more to me, made a slightly larger impression than somebody who wasn't ultimately gay. But with this counselor, I, and again, most of my years at Lafayette are a big blur at this point. I don't know if I have amnesia or if that's normal, but I just, I just have little snippets in my mind and not a clear continuum. So, but I just remember this counselor really liking me, and whenever we'd come up to the, you know, you think I'm gay, she would say, oh, no, you're just not gay. And this is my counselor. I mean, so she didn't really even provide an environment that would let me entertain the possibility that maybe that was the underlying truth. And, you know, if there's one thing I've learned in life, it's that when things are very complex, there's usually a simple truth that is a simple truth that's being denied that is the cause of all that complexity. And, you know, fast forward a few years, I got all the way through grad school not being gay, and it was not until I started living on my own independently that I, you know, had a few lonely nights and ended up wandering into a gay bar. And it was like lightning. Mm. As soon as I walked into a gay bar, I was probably about 22 or 23. It wasn't a matter of 48 hours that it was like, oh, this is what my issue has been all along.
Yeah.
I guess I'm gay. Yeah. But at Lafayette, it was just denial.
Yeah.
It was just denial, and you know, but it wasn't a great burden on me. It just wasn't, it wasn't resolved. And I think using the word resent is too strong, but I regret that, you know, if I had come to terms with it a little earlier, I don't know. I mean, I love my life now. I've had my life has unfolded in a terrific way. But it would have been interesting to see how things would have unfolded differently had I, you know, been comfortable being gay when I was at Lafayette. You know, I went to the University of Pennsylvania for graduate school, and I don't know, that could have been a lot of fun. And Very, very, very different for me if I had come to terms with it earlier. So,
The when you sort of trying today to conceptualize a mental health professional talking to a young person and saying, no, you're not gay, and just sort of refusing.
Well, you know, one of the things that, you know, most people who meet me, you know, I don't have stereotypical gay attributes. I'm, you know,
cisgendered, just masculine. Yeah,
just people don't pick up on it.
Pardon me.
Except maybe the type of man I'm attracted to might notice my eyes. But so that might be the only giveaway. But, you know, generally I fit in well in a heterosexual world. And, you know, one of the modes I've been in throughout my life has been, you know, my business served a heterosexual world, and, you know, 98% of my friends, our friends, are heterosexuals. And I don't know, our mode all of our lives is to, you know, provide an environment of comfort, you know. So the fact that Ted is gay is just, you know, just some extra information, but there's nothing uncomfortable for anybody, or there's nothing even that different about Ted. So I think I've used my life to, you know, rather than be an activist or march in parades or anything like that, my life has been just about inviting people over to dinner and having them realize that, oh boy, Ted's gay, and there's nothing to fear, there's nothing uncomfortable. It's just a fact about him. So I feel we've done some good in that area, and you know, we belong to both country clubs in the Lehigh Valley, both Saucon Valley Country Club and Lehigh Country Club, both of which were traditionally, you know, I mean, both at some point didn't allow any Jews, and you know, really conservative clubs. Yeah. And Kevin, my partner, and I, we've been pioneers at both of those clubs.
That's great. But
in both cases, we're the only openly gay men at both clubs now. And, you know, we're there. It was a little bit of a struggle for some people when we first applied, but we are, you know, generally highly respected, you know, members of both of those clubs now.
Yeah.
And so I think we've done a lot of good.
It's path-breaking in its own way, absolutely. Thinking about your experience at Lafayette, it sounds like one of silence more than anything else. It didn't come up much.
It didn't come up at all. It was just
Then when you tried to bring it up, somebody said, well, not really.
No, you can't be. You couldn't possibly be gay. No,
don't worry about that.
It's not that.
Yeah. Wow.
There was an extreme aversion on, and maybe I'd love to read her notes on me, because maybe I heard what I wanted to hear from her, but my recollection is she was in denial as much as I was.
Oh boy, right?
Yeah.
It's funny because one of the things that we use as a prompt is if there are, you know, there were sort of services for people that were wondering, because we're talking about college age individuals, and wondering is often the case more than identifying in some way. I mean, that's not unusual for an 18-year-old or a 20-year-old to be thinking about their identity as opposed to having an identity.
Well, for me, it was just about, you know, attraction to my friends. And so I went to the counseling center. It was powerful enough that, you know, I went to the counseling center, and I wouldn't have known of any other, you know, resource that would have been available to me. There were no banners. There was nothing in the student center. There were no rainbow flags. I didn't even know what the rainbow flag was, you know. It's interesting, you know, the name of this project is, you know, the queer studies. And, you know, honestly, I mean, I've never liked the word queer. When I was growing up, you know, the word queer was, you know, in the same boat as fag or other, you know, slang demeaning terms.
Yeah.
And I mean, being honest with you, I don't like it to this day. I think it's one of those words that You know, I actually, before this, looked up because I wanted to see what the word queer actually means in the dictionary. And it said, of questionable nature or character, suspicious, shady, strange, odd from a conventional viewpoint, unusually different, singular. And, you know, so I don't know. I grew up with sort of those negative
yeah.
definitions. And I, you know, I certainly, in the community I grew up in, I remember my mother, my mother, who ended up being a great supporter of mine after I did come out as gay in my 20s, and my father. But they used to, you know, there was a guy serving ice cream at the Dairy Queen, and they would call him the Dairy Fairy, and then she would say, oh yes, he's queer.
Yeah.
And so to me, queer has never been a term that's been comfortable. Now, I did read, in the same thing, it said, that queer has become accepted amongst younger LGBT and in academics as a single word that is an alternative to refer to anybody who's LGBT without specifically needing to use a specific label. But just being honest, I don't like the term, and I don't use it.
I think you would have a lot of company in that regard.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people perceive and really, they deeply feel it's as a negative.
Yeah.
That it's pejorative. And the last thing, life is hard enough, right? That you're not going to add a pejorative and call yourself that.
Right.
It's interesting, the definition you looked up is quite a perceptive one, because among younger LGBT mm-hmm. people, that is the word they use. And it is very generational. And the other one is academics, because it's just like a form of academic thought,
yeah.
right? Queer theory and all this. And so
mm-hmm.
It is very singular. But yeah, no, point well taken. And in fact, when you see our digital humanity site, when that goes public, you'll see that we have a short essay on
mm-hmm.
how we decided to use this. So throughout it, we tend to use LGBTQ+, trying
yeah.
to use that to, because the groups are separate too. Trans
yeah.
people have different identities from lesbians. I mean, it's
mm-hmm.
it's not all really that easy to just sort of lump together. But I like the debate, and I think we should keep thinking about it, because it really
yeah.
matters what people feel comfortable with.
Well, sort of back to the theme that I pointed out earlier, that, you know, the good that I've been able to do in my adult life as a gay person is, you know, I'm a bit of a politician in that, you know, I try to help people that otherwise might not know a gay person or be comfortable with it. You know, I try to do everything I can to make them comfortable. And I see, you know, when people use the word queer or cisgen or anything with the word trans in it, you can almost just see with a certain conservative folk that those are just, yeah, those are just places they're not quite ready to go.
Yeah.
But and so I'm just very, very careful. I'm actually on the board of the Lehigh Northampton Airport Authority. I'm one of the board of governors right now. And I had noticed that in all airport contracts and in the bylaws and everything, in the non-discrimination clauses, you know, that sexual orientation and gender identity are missing. And so I quietly brought this up 2 years ago and it's turned into a two-year debate whether the airport authority should add these terms as the protected classes. And it's, without going into it too deeply, but, you know, the two camps are, hey, it's just the right thing to do. It's with the times. You know, Allentown, Bethlehem, Easton all have added this. Both counties, Lehigh and Northampton, the county executives have made proclamations that we will not. Governor Wolf has declared it. The FAA, provides, has a very strong statement on its website saying we do not discriminate.
That's good to know. I didn't know that.
But the other camp, you know, argues, well, the federal government, the full federal, does not you know, count sexual orientation, for example, as a protected class. And neither does the state officially. It's just been, you know, Governor Wolf made this executive order. So, you know, and so then there's the argument, well, there we're a board and we cannot, we should not be doing anything that creates theoretical extra financial risk or exposure. So, and you know, maybe our insurance rates will go up because now we could be subject to lawsuits for, you know, additional categories of discrimination, lawsuits and everything. So literally, we just had a huge debate about this yesterday, and you know, I really don't know where it's going.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, one, you know, when I in conversations like that, I'm very, very careful because there's the whole gamut of political and religious views represented on that board. And I'm very careful to be very neutral in the terminology that I use so as to not make the issue as comfortable as it possibly can be to speak openly
about.
Right.
Yeah. That's the advocacy work that you do requires a certain form
sensitivity.
Of
sensitivity.
Yeah. That's the word. Well, that's politics, right?
Yeah.
It's sort of working with different constituencies to try to get, you know, the, somewhere positive.
Exactly.
It's a fascinating story. I'm thinking about, and we're a very similar age, so I'm thinking about sort of the silences of the mid-80s, right, around these issues. And Lafayette, the Lafayette you described was very much of that, sort of not saying anything, not talking anything. So I wonder if this is a helpful question or not. The answer might just be no, but I was thinking about, did it feel, since you really didn't sort of quote-unquote identify, did it feel like there were allies or supportive people around these issues, or was it just so not discussed that it didn't feel like it was just sort of a vacuum around these issues?
I would say there was a vacuum around the issues. You know, I went to the one place that I thought might be a safe place to talk about my innermost struggles and feelings at the time, and you know, didn't. I mean, I got a lot out of the counseling.
Yeah,
you know,
more
but
generally.
Nothing more generally, but not that.
Yeah,
so. So I would say no. I wasn't aware of any issues, and I wasn't ready to label myself.
Yeah.
And you know, I was just focused on everything else.
Everything else you were doing, and you were doing a lot. Other aspects, just sort of as a person sort of thinking about these issues, gender, religion, socioeconomic class. Do you feel like, you know, sort of thinking about, sort of wondering about yourself and attractions to friends? Were there other aspects of your identity that sort of intersected with that?
Have to give that some thought.
Okay, that's fine. That's fine. So social scene, so not a big social scene, but you did mention Greek life, and
that was very important to me.
Yeah, that seems like that was one of the central organizers of your experience. You were in a fraternity the whole time. You were an officer in your fraternity.
It was, you know, back then the rush was in your freshman year, and you.
Oh wow! Yeah.
And I, other than living in a freshman dorm, I moved. I was a Phi Kappa Psi. And I moved directly into the house and spent all, you know, three subsequent years in the house.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know. It was fun, first of all. You know, I developed some strong friendships and, you know, I can think of three or four of my fraternity brothers who are still, you know, my best friends to this day from, you know, from that era.
Yeah.
They were all fraternity brothers. And, you know,
we
went through things. We had a lot of laughs, drank a lot of beer, and had a lot of fun. And I guess some of the fraternity, somehow my leadership qualities were evident or came out. And so I ended up, you know, vice president of the fraternity in my I think my junior year, and then my senior year I was the president of the fraternity. And you know, my struggles as, you know, precedent were things like telling people not to grow marijuana in their rooms, and there was
your presidential duties included.
Yeah, and there was a tradition at the time where the pledges would go out and bring a Christmas tree to the house, and invariably they'd end up cutting down a Christmas tree from somebody's yard, and and then the police would show up.
Right,
so, these were the struggles
yes.
of leadership.
Well, if the police show up, it counts as a struggle.
Exactly. But, and I really wasn't, I don't think I really was dating any. I dated some women in senior year, and just again, more to impress my friends. And I had started a computer consulting business early on. I always had great summer jobs with large corporations, and I was always working on software projects beyond the academics. I loved the computer science program with a passion at Lafayette. And I'd literally get a homework assignment and it would be the first thing I'd do.
Yeah.
Even if it wasn't due for 2 weeks,
your calling.
I just
you
was
loved
into it.
That's great.
I was into it.
That's what we want students to find. We want that feeling of I can't wait to read this. I can't wait to do this or try this or see this or get my hands on it. That's really marvelous.
So by junior year, I was actually running a business
consulting
business out of my fraternity. Yeah. For a couple of local companies that I got connected with, through some summer internships that I did. And so I was just busy and keeping myself entertained and stimulated that way.
Yeah,
and,
indeed.
My sexuality was just repressed. And,
there was no place for it.
There was no place for it. Other than just, feeling, I think that, you might, if you interviewed some of my fraternity brothers, they may in retrospect have said, Ted was a little, I could see that.
Mm-hmm.
They might have picked up on it.
Huh, that's interesting. So I have to ask, just out of sheer curiosity, the hazing that wasn't dangerous but was just sort of the homoerotic hazing. As you've piqued my curiosity, it's
well,
fair to say no.
But there's plenty of things that the pledges end up in their underwear. And
I didn't know
everybody, that. Or everybody ends up taking, washing eggs off your face in the shower together.
Okay, gotcha. All right. Yeah. See, that you say that like everybody knows that pledges end up in their underwear, but I did not know that.
Well, in the 80s they did.
They did in the 80s. Yes. Okay. That's gotcha. So. I follow that. Absolutely. So Greek life, wonderful. The athletics, were you involved in athletics at all?
It's funny. That's another thing that's kind of a blur. I've always been a skier. I believe I was involved in the ski club a little bit at the time, but no, I really wasn't sports focused. I used all my spare time to be working on computer related endeavors, both inside and outside Lafayette.
Yeah, that was your thing. Yeah. So no clubs or any. I mean, you had friends.
I think I filled my life at Lafayette with Greek life.
Yeah,
computers. And, I was a strong student, so I worked hard on the academics and,
that's a very rich, full.
That kind of filled up my life,
yeah.
So I didn't really do any competitive sports at the time other than just, fraternity oriented things.
You were plenty busy if you were concentrating on academics, doing something on the side, and also a leadership role in your fraternity. That's a very full life.
It was.
Packed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So academics, classroom climate, I'm guessing in this culture of silence that you're describing, the LGBTQ issues did not come up. They didn't.
No.
Any?
No, maybe in a philosophy class. Hmm. But it's too vague to remember specifics, but no, it just wasn't.
No course content or anything at that
Not
point.
That I recall.
Okay, yeah, that's.
I took plenty of humanities courses, you know, Carolyn Van Dyke, you know, computers in society and things like that. But I just don't recall anything.
Yeah, it didn't come up. Well, nothing. That's not nothing. Too surprising given, I mean, it's of a piece with what you've described. What did you take with Lynn?
Well, at the time, the computer science program was very new and small and modest. So as I recall, there were only three professors who taught computer science. There was Dr. Schwar, who was the head of the department at the time. And then Carolyn Van Dyke, I believe she was a dual professor. She taught some, you know, she was English and computer science. So she taught sort of the softer courses. I know she taught computers in society, and she did some intro to programming courses.
Okay. So she was teaching in CS as well as... Oh,
yeah.
That was her time. Because I know she overlapped, and being a multi-talent, she was in multiple places. So.
And I just, you know, her style of teaching and her kindness and warmth, and I think she recognized pretty early on that I was talented in that area.
Yeah.
And passionate in that area, and I think she picked up on that and really took me under her wing.
Yeah, we're good at that, us faculty. We see the sparkle in your eye when you were even talking about how much you enjoyed things made me think, oh, you were somebody's joy as a student, because that's, you know, you want a student who's just so excited about what they're doing, because we are, I guess. Mm-hmm. So sometimes folks can recall public moments, sometimes not. An example is folks who were on campus in the early 90s remember when the AIDS quilt came, for example. Anything like that, speakers?
I honestly remember nothing. I remember a few political speakers, but we were... as I recall, the bigger fears were that Reagan was going to get us into a nuclear war or something. I remember some activist speakers coming and scaring the daylights out of us that, you know, the world was about to end due to nuclear war.
Right. I remember that too.
But can't say anything about LGBT.
Yeah.
It was just a fringe thing.
Yeah.
So I said there might have been a few people that, you know, were... You know, that were the gossip of some students saying, oh, you know, he or she is queer. Or
not in the good inclusive way. Absolutely.
Sort of in a whispering, I think he might be, but that's about it.
Yeah, gotcha.
So I did my best to hide anything myself like that.
Yeah, that makes, one does really see a picture as you talk. Of the climate in the field, I wouldn't have expected there to be public events given what the realities that you've described day to day.
Yeah, and it was I mean, I would rate my overall Lafayette experience to be quite positive. I just, you know, that aspect of me was just not. There was nothing to cultivate self awareness in that area. There were no outlets. There were no avenues.
Yeah. It had to wait till you were in a place where you could.
Yeah. You know, I just did remember one thing. I remember my brother, who's just a great guy. I have an older brother. And I think he picked me up maybe in my junior or senior year from Lafayette. And we were just went out for a drive with he and his girlfriend. And he had mentioned that he had gone to, there used to be a gay bar in Bethlehem called Jeff's City Line Pub. And we drove by it, and he's like, oh yes, my girlfriend and I went in that, and you know, gay people are so cool. And it was like so much fun. We were dancing and it was fun. And you know, my brother's straight and married and there's no issue there. I remember making a mental note of that place. And I think maybe at Lafayette once or twice, you know, my thoughts wandered that maybe I would, sneak out and go there, but I never did. But then fast forward a few years, and when I remember earlier in the interview, I mentioned that on a lonely night when I was finally living on my own, I wandered into a gay bar. Well, that was the place I went.
Yeah.
Because my brother had sort of just,
given it his stamp of approval, as it were.
Yeah, yeah. He just, you know, and he wasn't leading me in that direction. Yeah, he just genuinely found gay people interesting.
Yeah.
And fun to be around.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's for many reasons.
Yeah.
That's a great story.
Yeah.
Anything else do you want to share or mention?
No, I think it is terrific what seems to be happening, you know, at Lafayette and many colleges and universities around the country. I mean, I believe in the publication that just came, was it, It's Okay to Be Gay? Was that one of your things?
Yeah, the Gay Fine by Me and all the different initiatives, yes.
Yeah, it just, so that would have positively impacted my life if all that was just there in the 80s when I was there. I may have come to terms with who I was, you know, several years earlier, and maybe avoided stress and struggle for several years. So, you know, my life meant, I wouldn't change my life for anything now, but, you know, it would have been interesting to see if I had that part of me resolved earlier in a supportive, you know, loving,
positive
way. That would be pretty transformational.
Yeah,
for a guy like me.
So much of what you say makes me think how well we serve students when we just give them a place where it's actively okay for them to be themselves, to provide those spaces that the college hasn't always provided in the past.
Yes. You know, and I'm Kevin, my partner, and I are raising a son now, Henry, who's 9 years old. And it's just, we as parents, we all try to just not repeat the mistakes that our parents met and everything. And, you know, so Henry's just growing up in such an incredibly supportive environment. And, you know, he is adamantly proud of his two dads and his friends and his entire universe. It's nothing but positive and support. So he's going to be a very special young man and man as he grows up.
Talking to you, I find that easy to believe. Ted Rosenberger, thank you for a wonderful interview.
My pleasure. Thank you.